Hi, I'm Katrina Daniel, and welcome to Primetime Crime, a podcast for people who want to know what goes on behind the scenes of the most notorious trending crime stories and what's going on in the minds of those involved in those stories. What are the detectives, the judges, the defense attorneys, and the prosecutors thinking? You'll hear it all on Primetime Crime, the podcast. This is Primetime Crime. I'm Katrina Daniel. By now, we've pretty much all seen the video of Gabby Petito, the 22-year-old young woman missing in Utah, and the intense search for her after she had a fight with her fiancé, a guy named Brian Laundrie, with whom she was traveling cross-country. Utah police were called after the couple was observed having an argument. Police separated them. Brian spent the night at a nearby motel. Gabby spent the night maybe in a camper van they were traveling in. She hasn't been seen since, and that's been since the end of August. So the erstwhile fiancé, Brian Laundrie, drove home all alone to Northport, Florida, without Gabby in sight. And now Brian Laundrie won't tell Gabby's parents or authorities where he left her, if he left her, if she's alive, or pretty much anything that might help Gabby's distraught parents find her. Joining me, veteran homicide detective Jeff Lewis.
CNN reporting on the still missing Gabby Petito.
A family begging for answers after a cross-country road trip ends in a mystery. Newly released police body camera video now raising even more questions. 22-year-old Gabrielle Gabby Petito from Blue Point, New York, missing for weeks. After setting off earlier this summer with her fiancé, Brian Laundrie, in a converted white 2012 Ford Transit van with Florida plates.
Gabby Petito never goes outside.
The pair documenting their journey on social media, including YouTube.
Hello, hello, and good morning. It is really nice and sunny today.
But local police found Petito's van and her fiancé, Brian, at the home they shared with his family in Florida. He returned there without her September 1st.
All right, let's talk about Gabby Petito and her boyfriend who isn't talking to anyone, including his allegedly future in-laws. What's your take on this case, Jeff?
My initial take is that this incident started probably well before they took their trip. I think that there were probably underlying problems, and maybe they took this trip to try to make their relationship better. And this is my speculation, because you don't normally take a trip with someone you love, go halfway around the country, and then return home without that person that you love, and then don't talk to anybody about it, right? I mean, that's not normal.
That's for damn sure.
So one of the things that I would delve into initially would be, did he have a girlfriend? Was there somebody else? Was that the reason that they had the argument that they had in the van? Did she see a text? Did she hear a phone call? Did something come up other than what she said was the reason? You know, she said she had OCD and that, you know, he got into the van and his shoes were dirty or something like that. And then they argued over that, and that led to her grabbing the steering wheel when they were being pulled over and that type of situation. But she was very upset when she was being interviewed. And there's usually more to those stories when you delve into it. So that's one of the first things that I would look into. The problem with this type of case is that the logistics that you need to cover all your bases, and fortunately for the Northport Police Department, they have the FBI to assist them, because, you know, Northport PD, 17 officers, that's it. And they have one of the biggest cases in the history of the country right now that they're trying to close and solve. So they have all the assistance they need. They have all the other jurisdictions anywhere, like the department out there that made the traffic stop. They have their assistance, you know. So anybody they need, they'll be able to contact. And of course, you know, the FBI has agents all over the country that's going to help as well. And then I would hone in on the last location she was seen was that traffic stop. And my understanding is that after that, they got a hotel. She stayed in the van. He went into the hotel and they spent the night, apparently. And as far as we know, that may have been the last time she was seen or heard from. So I put 100% concentration on that hotel. I send a team of detectives there. I do the forensics in the hotel room. I check the dumpsters. I bring canines in there. I check him. Did he go to a Walmart? Did he go to a Target? What did he buy if he did? Did he buy garbage bags? Did he buy a suitcase? Did he buy bleach? Did he buy rubber gloves? Did he buy anything that he could use to help get rid of the body? I believe what may have happened was that she came to the room, or he invited her to the room or to the van. Could have been either or. And maybe in a heat of passion, he strangled her. He killed her, somehow killing her. Probably in a heat of passion. Maybe she was fighting him. Who knows? Maybe she tried to kill him, self-defense. We don't know. Either way, the way we see it right now, there's no body, but there is a Brian, right? So I would take that search and follow any leads that come out of that. The other thing I'm doing is I'm checking the, we've got the vehicle. So we're going to do the forensics on the vehicle from inside, outside, up underneath, the wheels, the tires, all the forensics. And I'm grabbing that black box that's inside that vehicle, because that black box has a GPS, okay? And that's going to also help us track movement of that vehicle. And of course, if any of the websites that they may have used, any applications that they may have used to travel, any toll booths, check those recordings, the videos. Did they go through a toll booth and she's in the car? Now the next toll booth, she's not in the car, you know, those type of things.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're going to, we're checking all her credit cards, all his credit cards, ATMs. Any place those credit cards were used, we're going there, we're grabbing the videos, we're interviewing people, we're finding out what was bought, what was purchased. And I want her credit cards to still be able to be used, because if somebody's using them, I want to track them.
Yeah.
Anything that has to do with her, her phone, I know they don't have the phone. Where is it at? Where's the last place it pinged? I'm sending a search team into that area. I'm searching with canines. I'm searching. I'm flushing that area where that phone last pinged. So we're gathering. Now we're going to put together all this information, and we're going to put a timeline together. And we're going to take that timeline, and we're going to start from A to Z. And by the time we get that timeline together, you know, we're going to have a pretty much a snapshot of what occurred, at least where they were. Every stop that they made, any place that they were, especially that's documented, you have to send detectives out there. You have to send FBI agents out there, do area canvases, talk to people, see if anybody saw it. You know, if people were staying out there, like he said, you know, people suggested that maybe she went off the grid. Well, guess what? People go off the grid. They may not have cell phones. They may not know what's going on. So you need to send somebody out there to find those people and talk to them. Did they see Gabby? Did they see this guy? Did they see something that's of interest to us? So you got to do a little searching. And this is all something that takes a lot of manpower. It's a lot of time to go ahead and handle that. And again, that's where the FBI and the other agencies come into play.
He has already lawyered up. I mean, immediately. What the hell was he thinking?
He's scared. When you lawyer up when you know you did something wrong. If he hadn't done anything wrong, number one, first of all, he would have made phone calls for help way back whenever it happened.
Good point.
Right?
And the same cops who got him the day before and kept them from fighting with each other and who separated them, same cops. You would call him and say, she's gone. I don't know what to do. Help me.
Absolutely. If you really care about somebody, that's what you do. You may offer rewards. You know, but you got to be careful with reward money, because that sometimes brings up people that we don't want to get involved also just in search of a little bit of money. But today the technology is so outstanding that I think this case is going to be solved basically because of the technology.
You do think it's going to be solved?
Absolutely. I think what they're going to find is that, you know, if he didn't dump her over the side of a cliff, honestly, I think he put her in either a garbage bag or a suitcase and put her in a dumpster and drove away or walked away, because that's, you know, he's not a serial killer. No. This is not what he does for a living.
Right.
He's an individual that's caught up in a situation. He's now, you know, in great fear for his own well-being now, right? Now he's panicking. What do you do when you panic? You do stupid stuff. You go buy that suitcase. You go buy those garbage bags. You buy the rubber gloves. You go to the Walmart, Target. You know, you don't think anybody's going to notice you. You don't realize that you're on camera every step you take in those stores. And you know, every hotel has a big dumpster right outside the door. Wouldn't be the first case where somebody's dumped the victim inside of a dumpster, knowing that the next day that the garbage removal people are going to come and put the dumpster in a dump somewhere. So, you know, if you think you can get away with it by doing that, you're going to do that. Because what other options do you have? You can't leave the body laying around. Now, to his advantage, he's in the wilderness. He's in the mountains. He's in wide open areas where, you know, you can dump a body anywhere. But somebody will find it. Unfortunately, it may be a while, you know. But I'm sure as we speak, everything that we're talking about is being done or has been done.
You think so?
I think so. I mean, you know, it's just these cases are unfortunately so common that all you got to do is just go back and review some other case like this. And you see all the steps that those detectives followed. You say, oh, shit, here we did. Boom, boom, boom. There we go. This is how we found him. This is how we got him.
Right now, your money at this point in time is on the fact that she is dead.
Yes, unfortunately, very sadly. And like I just said, you know, this, if you as a homicide detective pull past cases, unfortunately, many of these girls and women end up like this at the hands of their boyfriends or their husbands for whatever reason. And it's all usually the same information that you get. It's the same reasoning. It's the same cause of death. It's, you know, it's nothing new. This is nothing new. What's new about it is we have a new victim that now the parents and the family and everybody's going to suffer, you know. And on the other side of the coin, you know, you've got him and his family. You know, that's their son. You know, they're going to protect him and cover him. But, you know, deep down as a parent, you know, what the hell is going on, boy? What did you do?
She lived with his family for a year.
Right. But, you know, as well as I do, you know, you bring lawyers into the picture, and Lord knows we all need them sometimes, right? We live with them sometimes.
All right. Come here, Rosen. As a criminal defense attorney, what would you tell Brian Landry?
So he comes into my life. How? I get a phone call from family.
Yeah.
He needs to meet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you arrange to meet with him or on the phone, I guess. And you explain to him the attorney-client privilege and that what he says is privileged. And you also explain to him that if he doesn't tell you what really happened, you can't really help him. So, you know, you as a defense lawyer, you don't want to hear the makeup story. You want to hear what really happened so I can give him good advice. So what I would do is I would call the police. I would arrange for his surrender.
Even if, what would you advise him? Not to say anything, not to answer his future in-laws or never going to happen?
Absolutely.
Answer their questions on what happened? You tell them not to answer those questions?
Absolutely.
That's bullshit. How can you do that?
Because I'm representing him, not the parents. My job is to represent him. And there may be a time. Maybe it's the next day. But not that day till you get your arms around the case. I mean, as a lawyer, you really need to know what it is that your client is involved in, what the history is, how this happened. You may want to interview some witnesses. You know, once you've allowed your client to be interviewed, it's over. Now, if the client comes in and says, make the best deal you can, I need to get this off my chest. This is what I need to do. You as a lawyer, as his lawyer, you don't stand in the way. You know, you aid him in that mission as well. But if there's any debate or any doubt, or if he says, very likely, I didn't do it, and that possibility that he would say that is very real. Maybe the next day after you've talked to him, he'll come back and say, look, I need to tell you some other stuff. I mean, that happens too. And so, you know, as a lawyer, you defense lawyer, you hear perhaps different versions of the tale, and you have to get through to the client as well.
Jeff, if you could talk to Brian Landry and or his parents, what would you say?
My best advice to them would be, listen, you need somebody to be sympathetic to your cause at this point in time. First thing we need to do is find her body. Where is she at? Let's give the family a little bit of closure by offering that up. Next, tell me what happened. Let me hear your version as to what occurred. Let's see if the evidence matches what you're saying. Right now, you're in a situation where you have literally the whole world looking down upon you, and you need to do something to better your situation. And this right now is the only way to do it, by not saying anything, by not assisting the police in locating her body and helping the family out. You're only making it worse for yourself, because when you go into court and you sit in front of a jury and you get convicted, it's too late for anybody to sympathize with you at that point in time. Let's make it right. There's always a reason for what occurred. Let's hear it. It may be valid. I don't know. Tell me. And then we'll work it out in the end. That would be my best advice. And I've done this many times. You know, I've dealt with many people, and I offer that advice up. And guess what? 9 times out of 10, they take that advice and it works for them, and everybody's okay with it.
Well, now, there's nothing wrong with waiting a day or two or three so that his lawyer can get his arms wrapped around the case and give the right kind of advice. Jeff, it may be that that's the right advice to go in. I mean, that certainly is possible. But look, I mean, just by way of example, in a murder case that I represented a young lady in, law enforcement wanted to interview her on day one. You know when they interviewed her? On day the end. When they finally figured out that it wasn't her, which I knew the whole time. But it took them to do their investigation, and I don't know that they would have believed her if she had walked in on day one and said, I didn't do it. Just to add a little twist to the tale, there will be no names that ever go with this. When the individual that was shot, law enforcement showed up, my client made the statement, something to the effect of, I shot my friend. Well, I mean, there you go. There's a confession for you. It's the first thing that my client said, I shot my friend. When in fact, that wasn't true. What had happened was, she and her friend were carjacked, and when she made a move to reach for a gun underneath the seat, and the bad guy shot her friend, what she was trying to say to the police was, as a result of my move,
I get that. Yeah, sure. Taking responsibility for somebody else's actions.
Yeah.
Feeling you could have stopped it or whatever.
And so there may be times that it's absolutely appropriate to have that conversation on day one. There may be times, like in this case, when it was the last thing that happened. Waited to the very end after the investigation was complete, and finally law enforcement came to grips with who was, you know, the wrongdoer here, and it wasn't my client. So while you may be right, there are occasions where that's not the right thing to do. So every case has to be handled on its own. And
right.
And of course, the whole world jumps to these conclusions about who the culprit is, right? Well, when that person comes to your office and you get the inside story, that may not be the case, or it may be one case removed. I mean, you just don't know. So I agree, yes, there are times to do that up front, but there are times that it's not appropriate. Right.
Well, the reason I say this is the time to do that up front, because if he is involved, we need her body. We need to find her. Now, if he wants to say, listen, I'll take you to the body, but I don't want to tell you what happened, I can live with that. We'll let the science convict you. That's fine. I'll do that as well. But right now, this is the situation where you've got a grieving family. And if I can do anything to help find that victim's body and recover her to get some help for them, I'm doing it. And I'm asking him. I'm going to plead with him. If that's the only thing you want to tell me is where she's located, I can live with that.
Have you ever had a defense lawyer provide a murder weapon to you?
Absolutely. Sure did. Four guys buying marijuana in Coral Gables, defense attorneys, brought the weapon to me because all these kids were juveniles, and every one of them they brought in because they wanted them to get help from me. So they all copped out to it.
Yeah.
Brought me the murder weapon and helped me close the case. And I worked with every one of those kids after that. I mean, you know, it's every case is workable, but this type of case here, because of number one, because of the publicity alone, and the parents on TV every day, and everybody wants answers. I offer that up. Listen, if my suspect doesn't want to cooperate with me, if he wants to continue hiding behind a lawyer in my own words and not say anything about it, that's up to him, and that's on him. And down the road, I don't want to hear him wanting sympathy from a jury or the judge because he didn't do his duty to tell me where the body was initially.
Why is everybody so sure that this young man is the killer?
Why is everybody so sure?
Yeah.
I think right now, all the evidence and common sense dictates that if he didn't kill her, he knows what happened. So tell us, what are you hiding from?
Now, a lot of the stories have included the fact that another couple was found dead recently nearby. How would you factor that in?
I would handle this as two complete separate investigations, parallel investigations. Let me concentrate on finding Gabby and figure out what happened to her. Let the other agencies investigate the double homicide that occurred. And I would obviously be in constant contact with them to see if there is anything there that is a connection. If we make a connection, now it's a dual investigation and we go from there, but it could be just pure coincidence that those individuals were killed by somebody else. And I don't know the details of that particular double homicide, so I can't really speak to that. But right now, knowing what I do know, that's how I would handle the situation.
Do you think there's any chance she just wandered off to get away from him and maybe get some attention and make him feel bad and guilty?
There's absolutely that possibility. But if that's what occurred, why doesn't he tell us that? Why didn't he call the police from there after she'd been missing for 24 hours? Why did he get into his vehicle and drive home and not tell anybody that she walked away? You know, I mean, we know that at one particular time he had locked her out of the vehicle and was going to drive away. And that's what initiated the police stop
yeah.
once she got back into the van. So we do know that there was something going on there. You know, this is not just a perfect relationship scenario. We already know that there's a problem. We have that on tape. We have the video camera information from the police officers that wore those body cams. So we know she was upset. You know who didn't act upset? Him. If you watch his reaction to that whole thing, he wasn't crying. He wasn't upset that his girlfriend, fiance was upset. He didn't care that she was in a backseat of a police car. Those are not normal reactions of somebody that cares a lot about somebody they say they do. I'm sorry.
Listening to your observations, Jeff, I like it because what you're doing is you're following logic and common sense.
Yeah.
And that's really, in my judgment, the way good police work is done. Because your observations about his behavior and his conduct, maybe it's explainable. But until it is explained, it does put him in the headlights. I guess I would just stand by my comment. If he called my office right now and I set up a meeting with him, you are right. If his desire is to cooperate and his desire is to bring some peace, then that's clearly in his best interest, because that is the shot you get. But if he comes in with a whole clouded story and he's not sure what direction, as a lawyer, there's only so many things you can do. And, you know, it's our obligation to do just this.
Sure.
Here's your chance.
Sure.
You take it or leave it. I, for one, never put myself in the place of the client and say, this is what I think you should do. I don't believe in that. You know, I believe in, look, here are all your options. You decide what you want to do, what's best for you. It's not my place to tell you what I think is right. best for you. But, you know, it is a lawyer's obligation to lay out the consequences of each decision that you're going to make.
Right.
And then sit back and let them decide what they're going to do.
Thanks for listening to Primetime Crime, the podcast. Follow us on Facebook at Primetime Crime and on Instagram and Twitter at @PrimetimeCrime_. Post your comments and tell us what true crime stories you'd like to hear about. Subscribe to Primetime Crime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. Thanks a lot.